right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Good evening. Firstly, big thanks to Demi and Mikey for driving us into the weekend. It is Friday, October 10th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the official chart show at 7pm, John Fallon joins us live from Portugal ahead of Ireland's World Cup qualifier. Damien O'Mara is in Turner's Cross for the Irish under-21's Euro qualifier, while Fergal Brennan rounds up the rest of the international football news. Jane Mangan has the latest racing news, and Stephen Ferris has his say on the weekend's URC action. Plus, we'll round up the rest of today's sports news headlines. And you can get in touch by texting 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Hello there. It is great to have your company on this Friday evening. Good evening, one and all, wherever you are listening from. Before we chat rugby with Stephen Ferris, an Irish senior record has been broken. Mona McSharry got off to a fast start on stop one of the 2025 World Aquatic Swimming World Cup. McSharry posted 219.95 to set a new Irish senior record. Short course, as we said, in the 200-metre breaststroke, third overall and into tonight's final. So, massive congratulations to Mona McSharry. We're chatting football later, we're chatting racing shortly, but we are chatting rugby now because Leinster make 8 changes in personnel to the starting 15, with 5 of the Lions contingent making their first appearance of the season, including Josh Van der Fleer, who captains the side for the first time. Former Ireland 7 star Joshua Kenny has been named among the replacements, and the 22-year-old will make his Leinster debut if he is introduced to the action. Van der Fleer joins Alex Sirocco and Max Deegan in the back row behind the unchanged pairing of Brian Deeney and Ryan Baird. In the engine room, Tyke Furlong returned to the team for the first time since making a 9th consecutive Lions test start over the summer. While fellow Lion Ronan Keller is also getting his first run out of the season at hooker, with Paddy McCarthy continuing at loosehead. In the backs, returning Lions James Lowe and Jamie Osborne are named in the team for the first time this season, with Jimmy O'Brien switching to the wing. Robbie Henshaw shifts to outside centre, with Kieran Frawley taking the 12 shirt, with Fintan Gunn and Harry Byrne making their first starts of this year's campaign at scrum half and out half, respectively. Leinster locked and loaded as expected. Stephen Ferris, are you expecting a big response considering they are coming off the back of consecutive defeats?
Yeah, I would like to think so. They're a really well coached team. Leo, listening to his post-match press conference after the first game of the season, the Stormers, it just felt like they'd get caught cold a little bit. Obviously, the travel, first game of the season, brand new team, lots of internationals that were playing, but obviously a lot of internationals that were missing. So I thought they backed up a really poor effort down in Stormers with a pretty good outing against the Bulls. And, they scored some nice tries, and some individual performances were a lot brighter than the previous week. So I expect them to bounce on again this week, especially with the players that you mentioned there being added in. And it's going to be a big game. At the second row, maybe there's still a little bit light in there with some of the younger guys, and Baird, obviously, who we've seen in the back row and winning man of the match performances in URC finals in the back row, is in the second row. But Alex Soroka is a tremendous player and didn't get much game time last year, a few injuries as well, so I'm really excited to see how he goes.
We had Bernard Jackman in the studio yesterday, and we're going through the Munster team news. Of course, Munster in action this evening. We'll pick your brain on your opinion on that one, Stephen. But considering there's no Sam Prendergast in the Leinster team, no Jack Hurley, are we prime now for Jack against Sam at Croke Park in a couple of weeks?
yeah. Like, it's Jack Crowley, like, he definitely seems to be in form. Like, I'm only 2 games in, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Sam Prendergast, just off the back of obviously a couple of defeats down in South Africa, probably didn't have his best day. He actually kicked reasonably well in the first half, but second half they got away from him a little bit, and now all of a sudden we're saying, oh, Jack Crowley's leapfrogged him. But we all know what Sam Prendergast is all about. He is a quality operator, and the cream always rises to the top, and I'm sure he will over the next few weeks. And we're all in anticipation for that game that's just around the corner.
I'm pushing that narrative now that this is it's built for that. Sam against Jack, Croke Park, Leinster, Munster should be an absolutely cracking contest. Other provinces, there are first Ulster starts for summer signings Augustus and Crean. Well, there is also a return to action for Rob Ballacoon, who makes his first appearance of the new campaign. Lockie Henderson captains aside, joined by Cormac Isichuku in the second row. Ireland internationals hooker Rob Herring and prop Tom O'Toole start in the front row alongside former Saracens forward Crean at Loosehead. Nathan Dowick and Jack Murphy resume their halfback partnership at scrum half and fly half after producing a player to match performance against Dragons. Zach Ward starts on the left wing with Jacob Stockdale returning, or starts at fullback I should say, after recovering from foot injury against Dragons. Does Ulster rugby excite you this year, Stephen Ferris?
Yeah, it does. I think they've shown glimpses in the first couple of games of what they can bring. Honestly, their back line is massive. Like, you know, obviously take out Jack Murphy at 10, and Mikey Larry when he plays at fullback, but look at that team there that you read out. You know, huge men. But unfortunately for Ulster this weekend, they're also up against huge men, with the Bulls more or less fully stacked with Steenkamp, you know, Wilco Lowe, who's one of the best tight heads in the world, Van Staden, no World Cup winner. You know, you have Voster and Moody in the centre. Keenan Moody obviously played for the South African side on the wing and in the centre. And you have, you know, veterans like Willie LaRue on the bench to come on if it gets tight, and even Ludwig there, the second row, who's a monster of a man to come on too. So like the Bulls, I'm surprised that they've went so strong, and adding in a couple of internationals. Obviously they played against Argentina in Twickenham only last weekend, so they'll be raring and ready to go, and off the back of obviously a successful championship with South Africa, they'll want to get their teeth stuck into the URC. So this is going to be a real tester for Ulster. I think, you know, the fans are getting behind this team. It was really, you know, dreadful to say the least, that, you know, how Ulster finished off last season. You know, capitulation in second half performances. You know, coaches coming under pressure, but there have been some really good individual performances. I know you mentioned Zach Ward there, and Jacob Stockdale has been very good also. The only worry and concern is that, you know, the set piece time, will the Bulls target that? Will they come after it? If Ulster can get that right, I do fancy them to get a home win and to keep the truck rolling. And unfortunately, last week didn't happen. They flew over to Edinburgh, and Storm Amy had other ideas to call that off. But, you know, a good first win against the Dragons, and, you know, something to build on, absolutely, getting into this game.
How do you change the mentality? Like, you mentioned the capitulations in an off-season now, going in with this newfound, because there seems to be positivity around Ulster rugby, but which is a bit surprising considering how they fell off last season.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately for Ulster, like when they reeled on their bench last year, it didn't make much of an impact, where other teams that they were up against in the business end of the season, it did make an impact. So other teams maybe got slightly better and stronger, and Ulster seemed to stay the same, if not, you know, start flagging a bit towards the end of games. And it starts to become a mentality thing too, not when it happens once or twice, but when you're going four or five times into the season. Like the start of it was against Cardiff, when they were 21-0 up at halftime, or 19-0 up maybe it was at halftime, and totally in control of the game. And then all of a sudden the crowd got behind Cardiff and they find themselves losing that game. And since that day, it started to become a really bad habit. So, you know, I think what I like about this Ulster side and what Richie Murphy is doing at the minute is get your most athletic players onto the pitch. And that's what he's done in his team selection. Rob Ballacoon is coming in to start a game. He hasn't played hardly any rugby for 2.5 seasons, but he is an incredible athlete. He's got pace to burn. We know he's got, you know, great skills, and they're just getting him in there. The same as, you know, it's easy to say put him or Jacob Stockdale onto the bench, but put Jacob Stockdale to fullback. Get him in there because he is playing well. And again, as a Chukwu, don't leave him on the bench. Get him into the second row where he played a lot last season, even though his best position might be in the back row. So I like what Ulster are doing, and they're going to have their work cut out, mind you.
7:45 tomorrow for that one. Ulster host the Bulls. Connacht are in Cardiff, same time, 7:45 tomorrow. Bernard Jackman mentioned yesterday about the selection headaches for Andy Farrell and the Ireland team, with blooding internationals back in ahead of the November international. Squad's going to be named next Wednesday the 15th. One change to the Connacht squad from last week's postponed game against the Scarlets: Sean O'Brien comes into the side, starting a blindside flanker with Paul Boyle missing out. Sean joins the back row with Keane Prendergast captaining at openside flanker. Sean Jansen at number 8. Dara Murray and Joe Joyce make up the second row partnership. Well, it's Dennis Buckley, Jack Ainger at loosehead and tighthead, and hooker Dave Heffernan Ireland. Sean Nocton is at fullback, and Shane Mullins, an Irish international, Shane Bolton on the wings, Cole Ford and David Hawkshaw in the centre, completing the side of scrum half Ben Murphy and out half Jack Carty. These players are going to be chomping at the bit to perform, perhaps try and impress Andy Farrell and even lads in peripheral that want game time for Connacht, considering the match was postponed.
Yeah, I think even, you know, the new coaching setup, the new regime, we know it's been all changed down at Connacht, both on and off the pitch. You look at the stadium down there, it's really starting to come alive. And I'm sure, I think it's come the new year, they're hoping to have the full thing open. So I hope that really happens, and they're on track. But yeah, Cian Prendergast is, you know, was left out in the first game. I think Paul Boyle actually got man of the match, and now he isn't starting in this game. Sean Jansen obviously at number 8, and yeah, there's going to be a lot of mixing and matching, I think, right across the board, not just with the Irish teams but with everyone. Give everybody an early opportunity in the season, and you know, it's now about trying to go out and grab that. Will Andy Farrell's squad look much different from previous squads? I'm not so sure it will. There might be one or two new faces, and these are the opportunities now that these one or two faces might get. So, yeah, the Connacht are obviously, you know, last weekend, again, they would have loved to have got a 80-minute game under their belt, but unfortunately they're now having to jump on a flight and head to Cardiff, a Cardiff team that obviously at home they're a proud, you know, Welsh region, and they'll be wanting to put in a good home performance. But you know, if Connacht, sorry, can find their groove, you would like to think that they could go over there and do a job on Cardiff.
Okay, that's all tomorrow. Tonight, Munster against Edinburgh. Will Munster come away from this match with 3 victories from 3 matches?
Yeah, I think they will. I think they weren't as impressive last weekend. Sure, they weren't.
They grinded it out, though. It was good game management.
Cardiff scored some really nice tries, but they could have been avoidable also. And again, team selection is you know, people are, I think it was the Scarlets, wasn't it, in the first game, and Brian Gleeson was, you know, running through people. There was clips, you know, being shown in the RT podcast with Bernard, and, you know, he was chatting through about his ball-carrying ability, and then he doesn't start last week, and then he's not starting again this week, and it's just like, you know, Gavin Coombs is in there. But it just shows that there is really good competition for places, and it's also brilliant just to give a big shout out to Edwin Odogbo, who has been out for what feels like forever. I think it's about 20 months, 21 months, something like that. I can very much relate to that with my ankle injury. So I'm sure he'll be nervous. I'm sure he'll be apprehensive, but also very excited to get out and represent Munster again on the big stage. And hopefully the boys can put in a really dominant performance and they can get the right result. But Edinburgh, yeah, you know, obviously didn't go their way in the first game. And with a week off, you know, they'll be fresh, and hopefully the weather plays ball, because if it does, this could be a really entertaining game.
Before I let you go, Stephen, Ireland A will take on Spain next month. The RFU has announced today Connacht scrum and contact coach Cully Tucker will take charge of the squad, which will be named in the coming weeks. He'll be joined on the ticket by Mossy Lawler as backs attack coach, Jimmy Duffy as forwards coach, and Sean O'Brien as defence coach. How much of a vote of confidence is this for Cully Tucker? Is he the next up and coming coach?
Yeah, I think so. I think back in my day, like the Ireland A sort of situation was a lot different. You know, the coaches sort of changed a bit during the season if there were any A games. Sometimes, you know, you might have went 2 or 3 seasons without one, and the coaches changed quite a bit. But it is an opportunity for these coaches to work with you know, potential fully fledged Irish internationals moving forward. And you know, if they go well, and you know, the players like them, and you know, Andy Farrell sees positive things, and the hierarchy see positive things, then it sure is a stepping stone. Unfortunately, you don't get to do it, you know, regularly enough, and you know, that can be frustrating for coaches as well, having to dip in and out. We all hear about, you know, how coaches struggle from international rugby to club rugby, going from that week in and week out to, you know, 10 internationals a year. But yeah, representing Ireland A was always good fun, because you always enjoyed yourself after the game back in my day, but it's a lot different now. And again, it's that opportunity for the boys to go out and try and grab. And, you know, hopefully we'll see some of the really young guys maybe be handed the shirt, that we maybe have only seen maybe play 4 or 5, maybe 10 times for the province. So, yeah, well, they should beat Spain handy enough. You know, let's be realistic about this. But you want to go out there and make a mark on them too, don't you?
Oh, most certainly. Okay, great. So if we're going to leave the conversation there. Stephen Ferris, thank you so much for taking the call this evening. We're taking a short ad break and then Jane Mangan is standing by at the chat racing.
Game on. Racing.
Now, there was domestic action at Dundalk today. Nathan Ferry House tomorrow. Both Nathan Cork House meets on Sunday. But Jane Mangan joins us now to look further afield. Focus firmly on Newmarket. We had the Group 1 Fillies Mile today. And Jane, it went precisely as expected. A winner for Aidan O'Brien.
Great use of words. She was favourite, she was fancied, she was very good in the Moyglare on Irish Champions weekend at the Curragh, and she was even better today. She was utmost confidence from her rider, Christoph Soumillon, into the dip. The question mark was how well she would see out today's mile trip, and she got every inch of it, but she quickened with extreme class, and it was a very easy watch for team Coolmore. She ran out a very impressive winner, giving Aidan O'Brien his 22nd Group 1 win of the season, leaving him on target to break his own record of 28 Group 1s for the year. Remember, he set that record back in 2016. The season is coming to a close. We have a Group 1 tomorrow that we'll talk about momentarily. You've got the Futurity at Doncaster. You've got the Breeders' Cup yet to come. But all of these Group 1s, as the season comes to a close, are important.
Okay, Precise actually slashed to 7-2 favour for it, the 1,000 guineas after blowing away the rivals today. You mentioned another Group 1 at Newmarket tomorrow. So the Dewhurst Stakes goes to post at 3 o'clock. Aidan O'Brien has Gestad, Zavateri, who was successful at the Curragh recently, is involved. Oxagon for the Goslings, while Distant Storm is favoured. A lot of talent on here on show, Jane.
Yeah, this is a proper colts race, and in my mind, the Dewhurst is the best two-year-old colts test for the juveniles. And Charlie Appleby feels the favourite in Distant Storm. He won the Tattersall Stakes impressive last time after disappointing somewhat in the Yeacombe Stakes at York. He's currently favoured ahead of Gestad of Aidan O'Brien's, the mount of Christoph Soumillon. Gestad came out second best in a tussle in the National Stakes with Zavateri, who's currently third favourite in the market. But remember, Zavateri, while not big in stature, has a huge heart and a real will to win. He's unbeaten in 4 starts already for Eve Johnson-Houghton. He's been the fairy tale story of the flat season. And on all known form, he deserves to be favourite. But it's currently the superpowers. It's the blue of Godolphin versus the navy blue of Coolmore. They're the top two in the market.
OK, talk to me about the race before that, the Autumn Stakes. There's Irish interest there?
There is. Aidan is a pair of runners in the Autumn Stakes. This is usually a good trial for Derby-esque type horses. He's got New Zealand in there, the mount of Wayne Lorden, who won a Curragh Maiden. And he's got Straight Up, who appears to be the first string, the mount of Christoph Soumillon. That horse won first time out on soft ground in Listowel last month. He's an exciting horse. Charlie Appleby has a runner in there in Alzanati, who's currently favourite, and the Goslings have Archer Royal. But I think Straight Up is an interesting one coming from Kerry.
Okay, let us finish our conversation on the Zetlin Stakes, 10-2 tomorrow at Newmarket. What catches your eye here?
Again, a pair of runners for Aidan, whose two-year-olds are so strong. He's got Pierre Bernard, the Camelot colt in there. He's got Endorsement, who's won. He's maiden well and impressively as well. But I think Al Graze for Andrew Balding is going to take a lot of beating. He's currently second favourite behind Look to the Stars for Charlie Appleby. Tomorrow's going to be a big day for Godolphin and for Charlie Appleby. They've got 3 favourites in the 3 big races. Surely, Shane, surely one of those is going to hit the back of the net.
Ah, it has to. It has to. Jane Mangan, enjoy Newmarket. Thank you for joining us this evening. Have a great weekend. We're taking a short ad break. Then we're turning our attention to association football. We're going to hear from Hamer Halgrimson. We're going to hear from Evan Ferguson. John Fallon's dialing in live from Portugal. Fergal Brennan rounds up the rest of the international news. And Damien O'Mara is standing by in Cork ahead of the Irish under-21s Euro qualifier. Lots to come.
Game on. Association football.
Now let us begin our association football conversation this evening by hearing from Hamer Halgrimson. He was speaking to the media today ahead of tomorrow's World Cup qualifier against Portugal in Lisbon. And our own Tony O'Donoghue began the conversation by asking Hamer about Seamus Coleman and John Egan, their return to the squad, and whether they have had a big impact on the group.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we picked them, of course, because of their quality, not because of their personality. But that helps that they have great experience, good leaders, both of them, and that obviously raises the next player's level, and that's always, the more leaders you have, the better team you have.
And when you look at the window, is the Armenia game more important? I mean, people would expect Portugal, such a good team, that they have the ability to beat every team in the group, home and away. So is the Armenia game more important of the two?
No, we go for this match, like every match, to try to get something from it. We have a game plan that we think is going to work. We'll see tomorrow if that materializes. But obviously, if you look at the table, we need at least minimum 3 points from this camp. And for obvious reasons, it's when you look at it, it's probably the Armenia game that everybody is saying, okay, we can have a good performance and a better performance than in Armenia and get 3 points there. So I understand your angle, but we are trying to focus on this one and try to get the maximum we can from this match.
Hey, Mia, Ireland teams in the past have got big results against big teams, Holland, Germany, Italy. Has this Ireland team still got that capacity?
You'll see tomorrow.
There's been so much focus for the players on qualifying for a tournament. Having spoken to some of the players this week, it feels as though they won't feel they've achieved anything in the green jersey until they qualify for a tournament. However, such a big game like away to Portugal, is this a chance for them to put in the performance and then really believe in what this team can do as a collective?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, we know that we need to have almost a perfect game to get something from this match. And if we do, we have a chance to steal a point or to win the game. Obviously, we need to try to keep a clean sheet. Always going to make it easier. But I think for the players to have a good performance, yes, they would definitely believe more and give them more confidence. That was taken away from us, if I can say that, in Armenia.
And then just in terms of the Armenia game, you said that there wasn't really any player on the pitch who had a really good game. How can you freshen up the team without losing the core of the team? Is that possible in international football?
I think everyone that played this game in Armenia want to correct what went wrong there, whether it was personal performance or collective performance. So everybody likes to have this opportunity that we have tomorrow to play against one of the best teams in the world and to correct what went wrong. That's it. Whether there will be personal changes, I think every true professional like an opportunity like we have tomorrow.
Amir, what's the most difficult aspect of preparing to play a team like Portugal?
Obviously, it's defending this team. We know from their past matches and against almost all their opponents, they will have possession, let's say 60-70% tomorrow. That's not would not be an unlikely statistics from past games. So we will be defending a lot of the time. So that will be the most challenging thing. And the goal-scoring threats from their players is not one player. It's a lot of them. So we cannot be focusing on one, then just another one will shine. That's going to be the toughest one. And then for our forwards to use the opportunities we get, probably is not going to be many goal-scoring chances we have, but we must maximise what we take from our chances.
Ireland manager Hamer Halkinson speaking there. Irish Examiner football correspondent John Fallon joins us on the line now. John, you're in Portugal. You were at that press conference. You're at the Portugal press conference. You watch an open training session or the start of it from the Irish team. What is the mood like around camp?
Yeah, good evening, Shane. You mentioned open training. It actually turned out to be that today. I think it was unprecedented that the manager actually allowed full access to the media for the entire session. For a competitive game. He'd done so in June in Luxembourg, and that was local friendly, but today we were able to see the full session. And you'd have to say the mood was fairly jovial amongst the players. We do know the respective form guides of these teams. It's really a mismatch on paper, but Nathan Collins did mention it after that terrible defeat in Armenia, that Ireland seemed to play better against the better teams. They raised their game. So in some ways, when you hear what Heimer Hallgrímsson just said there about the target being, or the minimum target being 3 points from the window, it is in some ways a bit of a free hit tomorrow. The important thing is, the imperative thing is that Ireland beat Armenia on Tuesday. But what Ireland must come away from Lisbon tomorrow night is with some respectability following that disappointment in the Yerevan. I think that's the main objective. I think trying to get the result is probably unrealistic as much as they will try, and they've talked it up today. But what you don't want them is coming back from a heavy defeat going into that pressure situation of the rematch against Armenia on Tuesday at home.
Were any secrets revealed at this open training session? You can sometimes try and make out a starting 11.
Yeah, you can, but no, I just think it's tradition with managers that they don't do anything in these what they call minus one sessions, because you're doing it basically in the backyard of your opponents, and as much as it is can be closed. I remember Martin O'Neill getting particularly agitated in Copenhagen, you know, back in his reign, about potential spoils going on. So no, you can't really glean anything in terms of selection. One element that did strike me was he seemed to be deep in conversation with Festi Ebiseli, who's back in the squad, and maybe you could deduce from that he's going to be involved. You know, there was a number of probably selection dilemmas he faces. Does he go after the problems he had in midfield last month? Does he go with the experiment that he engineered against England by putting Nathan Collins into midfield? If he was to do that, then that creates a vacancy at centre-back. You could bring Jacob Ryan into centre-back from right-back, and that leaves then a position to be filled at right-back, which could go to Seamus Coleman or even Festi Ebiseli. So that's probably the one takeaway I would have from it, but purely on a hunch rather than anything of evidential value.
Fergal Brennan also joins us on the line, journalist Fergal Brennan. Fergal, what do Ireland need to do to avoid being overwhelmed early on and just try and build confidence against an opponent with so many stars?
It's difficult to gauge because confidence is obviously taken a whack based on the results in September, particularly the defeat over in Armenia. I think there will be changes, and the idea of bringing experience back into the squad with Coleman and John Egan, there's obviously a nod towards this idea of whatever happens, don't concede early, because that could then lead to a capitulation and a real nightmare in Lisbon. It is very difficult because the Armenia loss was such a kind of slap in the face in so many senses, because the positivity in the final moments against Hungary, getting that goal, getting a point, and then travelling for a game that we're expected to win, not, you know, kind of cruise to victory, but get the win that was needed, and then that just didn't happen. So I think the crucial thing for Ireland tomorrow night is to recognise the situation, and the manager's been very honest in saying that Portugal will have the majority of the ball, they will create the majority of chances. So the crucial part here is transitions and pace on the break. Too many times in Armenia, the lack of mobility in midfield from certain players was very, very obvious. When the ball was given away, they just weren't able to cover the ground and react, win back possession and then turn it over quickly. So I think we will see players put in either from the start or late on, particularly if the situation is managed appropriately and we're, you know, level after an hour. Ebusele or Bene, both operators that can come on and change a game. I'd be championing at least one of the two of them to be starting because of that skill set that they've got. Possibly Mikey Johnston as well. I just think that idea to carry the ball from midfield up towards what will probably possibly be Evan Ferguson leading the line is very, very important, because the issue over mobility and the issue over to pass in tight spaces in midfield is not going to have been solved in the last 3 weeks. So the idea is when a turnover is won, use that pace, whether it is Ogbene, Ebusele, Mikey Johnston, to get forward, get up to Evan as quickly as possible, and then try and make the most of what is going to be limited chances. Nobody wants to talk down the possibility, however remote it might be, of a big result. But it is about being realistic about the situation that we're going into tomorrow night.
You mentioned Evan Ferguson. He's been speaking to our own Tony O'Donoghue today.
Well, I think it's a different way. It's a different way of football over there. You know what I mean? He's sort of looking to play through his strikers. He's big on attacking and playing through the strikers. So it's just about the work that you're doing every day and trying to improve.
Probably the simplest question you've been asked with Ireland. How are you? Just talked through your fitness at the moment.
Yeah, I'm fine. I was trained all week with no problem, so all good.
And can you just talk us through the game? Because the coach said there was an ankle after the Fiorentina game, I think it was. But just talk us through the last two games and the thought process between sitting them out.
I just had a problem in the game before the last and wasn't able to play in that game. But with a bit of time coming into camp and having some treatment, I'm all good.
So fit to start?
Yeah.
Fit to start. Probably will start, as Fergal outlined there. John, will he be able to lead the line? Will he be able to do something magic tomorrow night?
It's a big ask, isn't it? It's a lot of burden on the shoulders of a 20-year-old, but he's well used to it by now. But yeah, the fact that he's shaking off that ankle injury. He was up before the press today. He did speak about trying to right that wrong of Armenia. And yeah, I think he's going to be the focal point of the attack tomorrow. As Fergal said, that's what we'd be looking for, really, is ball retention. That's the issue that Ireland have suffered with, particularly in the first half against Hungary and over the 90 minutes in Armenia. So you really want, you know, players getting up to support him fairly quickly. Because, as the manager said, you're probably looking at Portugal having 70% of possession over the course of the game. So when Ireland do get the ball, they'll have to maximise those opportunities. And it may even be a case of just a scrappy thing like getting a throw in and bringing up that, you know, that catapult that Jake O'Brien seems to have more for Everton than he does for Ireland. But maybe he can sort of that magic that you're talking about.
Yeah, Keith Tracy and Alan Colley during the week were talking about going back to basics. But from being around the camp, John, just in terms of desire, like how do a team turn a brutal showing in Yerevan into a mistake-free, defence-intensive, passionate and energetic performance?
Yeah, I think that's a minimum, you know, showing a bit of energy and verve about the performance that was sadly lacking, you know, once the first 5-10 minutes passed in Armenia. It's a very difficult task because they're up against, you know, a Portugal team who were fifth in the world, fourth in Europe, and they're not just talking about qualifying for America next year, they're talking about winning the tournament. And this is the first game in Portugal since the tragic passing of Thiago Jota. And Roberto Martinez actually made a point of stating that the motivation is even higher now to go and win the World Cup, their first World Cup that they would win after winning the Euros a few years ago. So that's what Ireland are up against. It's not the ideal game to be coming off a deflating defeat in Armenia. But the flip side of it is there's very low expectation on this Ireland team. You know, they're not expected to get anything out of the game. And I know we're going back 4 years to being on this in this country of Portugal, where in Faroe, Ireland were ahead. Mm. 1-0 up to the 89th minute until Ronaldo got that late brace. So that was probably a similar backdrop in terms of the approach, and that there was very little expected of Ireland. And it was a back to the walls performance. Made the best of Alameda up front, who he was at the time, probably one of his best games for Ireland. And Evan Ferguson is probably going to be that person for the majority of the game tomorrow.
You mentioned Roberto Martinez, obviously speaking of the emotions surrounding Diogo Jota, and that's completely understandable, and the broader picture and the bigger picture for Portuguese football. You were at the Portugal press conference. Were there any questions about Ireland? Did they speak about Ireland, or is it just complete focus on themselves?
No, there were questions. Yeah, there was sections of Portuguese and English, and it was Bruno Fernandes who was the player up, and you know the comments that he replied were sort of the stereotypical Irish traits, you know, are going to be dangerous in duels and from set pieces and so on. But he was asked about that recent penalty save by Caoimhín Kelleher when Brentford beat Manchester United. Now he's probably not going to be on penalties. Probably be Cristiano Ronaldo tomorrow night. But that was one angle to it. And then Roberto Martinez, he was, you know, asked about his history with Seamus Coleman. They were together at Everton, and he made the point, and I know we're going back 12 years, he says that Seamus was the best right back in 2013 in that season. And they'll probably renew acquaintances tomorrow. It's actually Seamus's 37th birthday tomorrow. And as Fergal alluded to there, in terms of needing experience and calm heads, tomorrow Seamus may well feature, I think, in this game. It's not from the start, but certainly some involvement.
Alan made that point actually yesterday as well, Fergal. Just following up on that, I know you cover Everton at Lent as part of your day job, but there's any man that can just kind of step into a match somewhat cold, but to be able to perform at a top level and to provide that leadership and desire and heart. And I think Hamer has mentioned that Nathan Collins will be captain, but it would be no harm having Seamus there.
Not at all. The difficulty is gauging how and when to use him, because he has played so little football this season with Everton. He just had a couple of scattered minutes in the Premier League and played in the League Cup as well. So it is difficult, particularly because also the system as well. Does he play on the right of a back three? Does he go in at right wing back? What does that mean for Jake O'Brien? Does he get pulled in field? It is very difficult to kind of make a call over where to use him. So the likelihood you probably look and say, if the game is going positively, as I mentioned, if it's tied or even slightly in front or slightly behind by 60, 65 minutes, he might be a player to come on just to make sure that there's no panic, because Portugal will really start to turn it up in that type of scenario. He'll slot in there, he'll talk to the players in front of him. And particularly, I mentioned again that idea with the midfield. I think that's been a big aspect in the last few games, that the defenders behind the midfield are not really telling them where to be. Josh Cullen, Jason Malumbi, Jason Knight previously, they don't have that kind of wider vision of the pitch that Collins and O'Brien and Darrow Shea have behind them. Seamus Coleman is very, very good in those situations of organising and making sure that everybody is where they need to be and everybody is absolutely motivated. So I think he will feature at some point tomorrow night. Whether it's a start, probably not, just based on match fitness. But just having him in and around the camp again is massively important, just due to the respect that he's held in this squad.
Gents, you might indulge me here now for some percentages and stats, because at Niall Wording 67 on Twitter, he's a great man for League of Ireland stats, but he's kind of laid out the lay of the land here for Ireland. So a win tomorrow would see their chances of finishing second in the group shoot from 17.5% to 35.5%, with a 6% chance of topping the standings. But as that is very, very unlikely, the real focus should be on next Tuesday's rematch in Armenia in the Aviva. So Ireland have just under 56% chance of victory. It draws 23.5%. A defeat would leave Ireland with just a 2.7% chance of qualifying. A draw 10% and a win would give them a 30% chance of emerging from the group. So I know Hamer Hallgrimsson said it's not. They're focused on this. They have a plan. They might get something from Portugal. But where do you stand on the argument that perhaps Tuesday's match is more important, John?
Oh, absolutely. It's without question. Like we're playing for second place here. And it probably be no harm if Portugal would run away with the group and beat everyone. According to the manager's forecast, he thinks that even two defeats to Portugal, coupled with two wins against Armenia at home and Hungary away, could still see Ireland in second place on goal difference. But there's quite a few uncertainties within that. If Ireland were given the chance now to go to Budapest on the 15th of November, having to win to get a playoff next March, they would absolutely take it, considering how devastating that defeat was in Armenia. Ideally, if you're to get a scrappy draw tomorrow and beat Armenia, that's 4 points. But at a minimum, and I think anything otherwise, and we'll be into crisis mode next week, they need 3 points on Tuesday. That's the very minimum.
Are there any signs of vulnerability Ireland can perhaps exploit tomorrow for Egler? Is that just too much clutching at straws?
I think a big call for Portugal is who starts at right back. Nuno Mendes at left back has been brilliant for PSG and for the national team in the last year and a half. Whoever plays down that right side for Ireland, be it Jake O'Brien, be it Giodosio Bene, that'll be a real battle. I think possibly over the other side, Diogo Dalot has been mentioned as an option to start at right back. And obviously he's coming in to Portugal from a situation at Manchester United, far from ideal. He's kind of not sure whether to stick or twist in terms of his position at United, and nobody's really comfortable with what Ruben Amorim is trying to do so far this season. So I think that's a possibility. I think in midfield, they will dominate the ball, even without João Neves. They've still got so much talent. Bruno Fernandes, Vitinha, Ruben Neves can slot in there. Obviously, Ronaldo will lead the attack and pace either side of him with Neto and Conceição. So I would say up that left-hand side. The only aspect that I would look at, which is a bit frustrating for Ireland, is there isn't necessarily a direct style player to play over that side. If it's Johnston or Azaz, they're going to want to float in field. If it's Ryan Manning, who does have pace and is quite a good crosser of the ball, but he's not really a 1v1 wing back or full back. It would be more someone like an Ogbeni if he played on that opposite side. So I think possibly if you can get into a situation with Evan pulling over to that side. There's a bit of a selection call as to who partners Ruben Dias at centre-back as well. So if there's a bit of a change at the right side of centre-back and Evan can pull into that space and try and loosen himself away from Ruben Dias, that could be an option. And obviously just the point that keeps being made, set pieces and throw-ins. I've been watching a hell of a lot of throw-ins in the Premier League over the last month. And I think one of the big things that was an issue against Armenia was there just didn't seem to be a plan for when the ball came in. It's all well and good asking Jake O'Brien to launch one into the box. You have to be structured about who's going to win the first contact, what's the plan for when that ball drops? It can't just be creating chaos. You look at what Keith Andrews is doing at Brentford. There is a plan over who's going to win that first ball, who's going to be the one to react, and hopefully who's going to be the one to put it into the back of the net. So hopefully that has formed part of the manager's plans in the last few days, because that could be quite an important aspect, because other than Diaz and one or two other players, there's not an enormous amount of height and aerial power in this Portugal team.
Okay, John, stick with us because I do want to chat League of Ireland with you. But Fergal, just staying with international football, away from Ireland, England had a friendly win over Wales last night. Was Thomas Tuchel right to criticise England fans?
I think to an extent. It's very difficult to get excited about a friendly game in any situation. The game was wrapped up after 25 minutes. A couple of really scrappy goals from Wales' point of view, and then a brilliant strike from Bukayo Saka back in the England starting 11. So I think the fans, from their position, the game was over. Wales did come back into it a bit after half-time. It is difficult to kind of rouse yourself in that situation. If you're an England fan watching that game, there's nothing on the line. There's a qualifier, obviously, away in Latvia on Tuesday evening, which will tick off World Cup qualification for them. So I don't really think the fans can be blamed too much for their kind of reaction. If it was 0-0 or 1-1 and the Wales fans in the corner were getting loud and then England weren't reacting, maybe Tuchel would have had a point. But I just think the wider optics of it are a bit tricky. He's unfortunately come in for some criticism that he doesn't necessarily deserve right from the get-go for reasons that are not related to football. And these types of comments, when things are already a little bit tense with the fan base, they're not going to help his position. England are going to qualify. They've been solid and absolutely par so far. The big test for him will come next summer. And for my money right now, I don't see a great deal of progression from Gareth Southgate. It all comes down to this idea that he's a better fit for the small margins, the big games, his record of winning trophies at club level. Because there's not a huge amount of enthusiasm. And the comments from last night probably will be taken with a pinch of salt by most England fans, but it will irk some of them who are already not overly happy with him.
Great stuff, Fergal Brennan. We're going to leave the international football chat there. Thank you for joining us. Just to mention as well, Northern Ireland are in action this evening. They host Slovakia. Northern Ireland level on points with Germany. 3 points from two matches. Slovakia top of Group A. So a tough test for Northern Ireland in Belfast. Shamrock Rovers, John Fallon, could be crowned League of Ireland champions this evening. They only need a point at home to Shelburne. Siobhan Madigan is previewing that one for us.
It's long been a case of when and not will Shamrock Rovers be crowned league champions again. It could come tonight. The Hoops will win a fifth title in 6 years should they simply avoid defeat against the side which pipped them to last season's title, Shelburne. However, they'll be without a number of key players for tonight's visit of their Rings End rivals. Danny Grant, Josh Honohan and Lee Grace miss out through injury. Michael Noonan and Pico Lopez are on international duty. Shell's defence of their title has disappointed in part this term. Their last win against Shamrock Rovers is more than a year ago. It's a back game for both sides. Rovers would dearly love to claim the title in front of their own home-adoring fans. Shells, on the other hand, need maximum points to extend the race for European qualification. Kick-off at Talla is 8 o'clock.
Kick-off is at 8 o'clock. And we have just got team news just in. So the Shamrock Rovers team, Ed McGuinty, Adam Matthews, Dan Cleary, Dylan Watts, Graham Burke, Danny Mandreo, Nugent Healy, Trevor Clark, Roy Gaffney, Corey O'Sullivan. So despite the players they are missing, it's still a very strong starting 11 for Shelburne. Wessel Spiel in goal, Cameron Ledridge, JJ Lunny, Harry Wood, Meepo Odebeko, James Norris, Henry Francis, Kieran McEnroy, Mbeng, Caffrey and Paddy Barrett. That is, of course, numerically not in order of how they will line up on the pitch. John Fallon is sure would be a tight contest, but will Shamrock Rovers be crowned champions tonight?
I hate to say it to you, Shane, but I think so. I think this is, I was at the Cup semi-final against Kerry last Sunday and was in the members' lounge beforehand when Rovers were within 30 seconds of winning the title without kicking a ball in the league that day, and then Michael Duffy gets that late goal against Sligo. But it wasn't a sense of deflation about the place. So speaking to Stephen Bradley afterwards, he said that he would much prefer to win it within their own, on their own terms, in terms of being at home, playing against, Siobhan says, a team that they relinquished the title to last year. They are missing a couple of players, but the Rovers could basically pick two teams given the depth of quality that they have. So yeah, I think it will be wrapped up tonight with four games to spare. possibly a draw, which wouldn't be a bad result for Shells, considering that they're sixth and trying to break into the top four, potentially top three, to get Europe if Cork City were to beat Shamrock Rovers in the cup final and deny them a double.
I think if Shells win at least one match between tonight and their trip to Cork on Monday, then European hopes for next summer will still be alive anyway. Like, still mathematically, even if they lose, but it'd be a bit bleak if they don't at least come away with 3 points. Elsewhere, Dundalk will be promoted back to the top flight at the first time of asking. If they can beat Finn Harps at Oriel Park, the Lily Whites will also go up if they match Cove Ramblers' result away to Longford Town on the penultimate night of the First Division season. This is a cracking title race because Cove host Dundalk on the final day of the season. We speak about, you mentioned you were at the Rovers Kerry match, and there was a narrative around perhaps Kerry did too much too young, in a way, in a sense that they weren't ready for a cup semi-final perhaps, or they certainly aren't ready for promotion. But Dundalk and Cove, are they both ready to compete at the Premier Division if one of them or if both were to go up?
I think with a lot of reinforcements, I would say. Kieran Kilduff, since he went in there, I covered him quite early in the campaign. They were very young squads. Sean Keogh has gone to Brighton, and Hove Albion. You got Finney Leonard there, who's a very highly rated centre-back all over the field. They have a lot of youth, but then they've mixed in with Daryl Horgan and Keith Ward. So I just think the gap between the First Division and the Premier is just widening it with every year. So and Kieran Kilduff would know the league very well. Mick McDermott the same. And he's only in this year, but they would be both pragmatic enough to know that they will probably have to do what Damien Duff did, you know, when he took the job and basically overhaul the squad to ensure that they are competitive and not stranded next season and going straight back down.
Okay, briefly, John, just before we cross to Damien O'Mara in Cork, John Sullivan signed a new 2-year contract at Athlone Town as women's manager. Former Athlone player Laurie Ryanham's announced as a new Treaty United manager. So a new era for both of those clubs. An end of an era for the Women's League of Ireland, though. Anya O'Gorman, Karen Duggan, Kylie Murphy, Gemma Quinn, all announcing retirements from League of Ireland football.
Yeah, it's sad in a way, but you're better off concentrating on the memories that they gave. Karen and Anya retired from international football to prolong their club career, and I think it was great that Karen got to win that title with Piemont, probably against the odds. So all those players that you mentioned, they fully deserve to put the feet up now for a while. And I know Karen is on the punditry circuit and a very good one at that, but you'd like to see her stay involved on the football side, maybe in the coaching, as is Anya O'Gorman and Shamrock Rovers.
Okay, great stuff. John Fallon, thank you so much for joining us. Damien O'Mara joins us live from Turner's Cross ahead of the Ireland Under-21s Euro qualifier. 2 wins from 2. Damien, will it be 3 wins from 3 after tonight?
Yeah, it's a massive night here, Shane. I'm being absolutely blown out of it by the PA system, so hopefully you can hear me somewhat coherently. We're looking at a situation where you have Ireland, who are second seeds in this group, against Slovakia, who were third seeds. The expectation is that England will cut a march through all of the other teams here to secure the automatic qualification spot. So a massive game tonight for these two teams, who have 6 points from 6 from their opening two games, to try and listen, it's far too early, 3 games into a 6-team group, to talk about this being a playoff for second place. But there is a real sense that whoever comes out the better of the two meetings of this side could well secure one of those playoff spots. Ireland looking to run an extension to what would be an 11-game unbeaten run at home. But it's a really, really big task that they face tonight. 3 changes to the Irish side from that which beat Andorra by 1-0 in the second of the games in the doubleheader back in September. Jacob Slater and David Akabu come back into defence. There's been a bit of a reshuffle which sees James Obankwa move to right back. Adam Murphy, the other player to come, he comes into midfield. So Jacob Devenny and Alex Murphy drop to the bench. Harry Vaughan, who had started that last game, is not in the squad. He misses out as a result of injury. So a big night for the Irish under-21s. Plenty of creativity. Big night potentially for Rocco Vatta. I know you've been talking about him regularly over the course of the programme. If he scores tonight, he'll move level with Kevin Doyle and Robbie Brady as the leading Irish under-21 goal scorer of halftime, and loads of great Irish talent on display. Big crowd due here at Turner's Cross. Kickoff is 7:30 and it's live on RT2 television.
Brilliant stuff, Damien O'Mara. Thank you for detailing all of that. That is all we have time for. Big thanks to Andrew O'Connor and Jarla Holland working on this evening's show. Up next here in 2FM, the official chat show with Hugh Carr. Game On's back from Monday, 6 o'clock.
This is 2FM.